There isn't an algorithm, at least not yet, to measure just how divided the American electorate is, and whether it's more divided than ever before in modern history. But it's become clearer to many that the current political system isn't set up to reward compromise or crossing the aisle. Instead, the system is as much about winning and losing as possible. And that has dramatically permeated what occurs behind the scenes, where politicians who disagreed did often try to work together in a civil way, even if they ultimately didn't vote the same way. It's into that environment that the University of Southern California has introduced the Center for the Political Future. Longtime Democratic strategist Robert Shrum is the director, and longtime Republican consultant Mike Murphy is co-director. And they're both with me to talk about what they've seen develop and lead to the current state of American politics. Bob, let me start with you. Do you think there's a greater need right now for something like the Center for the Political Future that focuses on bringing sides together, more like politics used to be?
We've reached a point in our politics where so often, and in fact it's more the rule than the exception, people are losing respect for each other and they're losing respect for the truth. So what we want to do is model and exemplify and advance a more functional politics. Everybody's not going to agree all the time. That's impossible. But you can accept the idea that no one wins every argument, and you can encourage tolerance for different viewpoints.
We see a politics now where the focus is the idea of each side saying to the other, I'm right and you're evil, so I can say anything about you, and I want your destruction. Well, that's not a politics that does anything for the country, nor does it create a model that can govern. You can be opponents. You don't have to be enemies. Politics ought to be a fight between ideas, and it ought to be a tough fight. Bob and I have been fighting each other professionally for years, but we're also friends. He's my opponent, not my enemy. And bringing those rules back to politics so people can learn to actually lose an argument and not make up their own rules or facts or vilify institutions and cause lasting damage would be, you know, it's kind of the politics we used to have. And we need to find ways in the modern era with technology and everything we deal with in communications to bring it back. Because when it's just, I'm right, you're evil, victory is destroying politics itself. And that does nobody any good. And of course, seriously hurts the country.
Well, Mike, how much of that is because of President Trump? And how much is the possibility of changing it back, at least more closely to what the two of you have talked about? How much of that is going to be attributable to people perhaps rejecting what they're seeing from the White House now?
Well, I think it's been a growing trend for a while, but there's no doubt that the tactics and the, frankly, disregard for the truth that President Trump has been using through Twitter and other disruptive media is a huge part of the problem. He's kind of taken a problem that already existed, this tribalism of politics, this I'm right, you're evil argument, and he's applied Miracle-Gro fertilizer to it, and it's had a real damage. So I think it's linked to Trump now, but the forces in our society and our culture that have fostered this, you know, Trump exploited them, but I don't think he created them. So in the post-Trump era, it'll be easier to find a better way, an improved version of the old rules, but it'll still be a lot of work. There will be Trump imitators in both parties going forward, and they will try to use some of the same tactics he used with the same corrosive effect. That's what we've got to try to work together to prevent.
And Bob, what do you think?
I agree with Mike on all of this, but the question is, what do you do about it? So what we're going to try and do is through conferences where we bring together people with very different viewpoints, you can, for students and for the wider community, taking the academy into the public square, you can model a new kind of politics, which is really a return to the politics that we used to have. We want to do across the board, in terms of both students and the wider community, a major effort to restore a politics where there's a degree of respect for the folks on the other side and where there's a respect for a common knowledge base of truth.
Now, the two of you wouldn't be involved if you weren't optimistic, but I wonder, are there enough minds out there to be changed? And obviously, I don't have the official numbers in front of me, but from people I've spoken to, it feels as though, even though we have many, many more independents, registered independents or non-party affiliated, the ones who have remained in the parties are extremely hard to convince. And I don't know if you think that has, in terms of voting for the other side or maybe even respecting the other side, how much of an uphill climb is this at this point?
It's a challenge. But the truth is that 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, we did have people who, even when they disagreed, say, in the United States Senate, could talk with each other, could be civil to each other, could find ways to work together. I think that once we move beyond this era that we're in right now, and that's what we're trying to help do, once we move beyond this era, people are going to look back and say, we need a different kind of politics. Now, that doesn't mean Republicans are going to stop being Republicans, Democrats are going to stop being Democrats, everybody's going to agree, and we're all going to sing together in one choir. That's not going to happen. But you can have a politics where people disagree respectfully based on an agreed set of facts, because you can have agreed facts, and then you can say, I don't think Medicare should be a federal program, which was the argument that a lot of Republicans, like Ronald Reagan, made in the 1960s. I think we should have old age health insurance, but it should be done by the states with federal encouragement. That was a perfectly civil argument, which got resolved. I think we can get back to that.
Yes, I think it's important to remember, as much of a challenge as this could be to the current political culture, the future political culture is yet to be made. And the largest political majority in the country is not Republicans, not Democrats, not independents, but people who are fed up with the political system, who believe it creates noise and not worthwhile outcomes, who believe it's all become kind of kabuki theater. And right now they express that by blaming the other party. Oh, the Democrats have screwed it all up. Oh, the Republicans have. There's a larger appeal and a supermajority in any kind of polling you take that the political system needs reform, it needs to work better and serve the country better. So there's an appetite to do kind of a reset as we enter the century with all the technology brings and see if we can't deliver people what they say they want, which is a system that works better and serves the country.
There is obviously a very, very famous former senator who passed away recently, and both of you know him very well, John McCain, who we know very well here in Arizona. How much does John McCain epitomize to some extent what the two of you are talking about in terms of not agreeing with the other side very often, but when you do, you're in, and it's not about the party or the other side. It's about still having friendships on both sides and being able to agree to disagree, as it were.
John McCain epitomizes exactly what we're trying to do. He was a principled conservative. He had very strong views. He could argue very vigorously. I can remember him having a fierce fight with Ted Kennedy on the Senate floor, and then they would walk off into the cloakroom, put their arms around each other, and sit down, have a drink, and talk about maybe, or a glass of wine, and talk about where they could find some areas of common agreement, which they did, for example, on immigration reform.
They had a friendship. And so for them, it was, even though they disagreed on everything, the larger cause, through the ideological prisms they both had, was the key thing. I mean, McCain was a good friend of mine. I worked for him. And he always knew that it was the principle that counted, the principle of serving the country, serving a cause greater than your self-interest. That's what he constantly repeated. And I know he organized his funeral to try to remind the country of that. To what we're doing, it's important, just a little McCain trivia here. One of his final jobs in the Navy was he was essentially the U.S. Navy's man in the U.S. Senate. And he got to know a lot of the old lions of the Senate, watch them operate, and watched how they would put the political theater aside to get things done. And it made a huge impression on him. He was really an institutionalist. And I think he always wanted to see the Senate get back to that. And that respect for a model that had its flaws but worked better is a lot of the inspiration of the message he wanted to send.
Mike Murphy, a longtime Republican consultant, Robert Shrum, a longtime Democratic consultant. They are co-directors of the new Center for the Political Future at USC. Gentlemen, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.